One of the things I tell people, you know, you talk about a learning process that people have, and that learning process, say to people, well, ask yourself this. Don't ask me what I think. Don't ask the guy on the radio what he thinks. Ask yourself, are they allowed to do this? And where does it say that? That's what you have to do. That's the first question you should ask people. And what do you think the purpose of government is? And if so, where does it say that? So you have to get people thinking about this themselves.
Everyone, welcome to another episode of Unrestricted. I'm your host, Veronika Kirilenko. The Great Reset is advertised by its authors and subscribers as a means to improve the state of the world. Launched by the World Economic Forum in June 2020 as a response to the COVID pandemic, the initiative looks to achieve the Sustainable Development Goals of the United Nations by 2030. If these goals are achieved, the world would resemble a paradise on Earth, they say. But every country must participate. How important are presidential elections in America in this context? What can American patriots do to recognize the threats and properly react to them? Today, it's my pleasure to speak with Matthew Rhodes, a regional field coordinator of the John Birch Society in New England. The JBS is the parent company of the New American Magazine and perhaps the only grassroots organization in America that has real solutions to protecting and restoring American freedom, independence, and our God-given rights. Matthew, welcome. Thank you so much for the work that you do and for finding time to speak with me today.
It's nice to see you, Veronica, and I apologize for all the times I spelled your name with C.
No worries. Matthew, let's start with the basics. You've made an interesting and very informative presentation titled The Great Reset in Maine. So what are the core facts that people need to understand about the Great Reset? And please tell us how it is being implemented in the Pine Tree State.
Well, the primary means by which the Great Reset is being implemented, or Build Back Better, or whatever term you want to call it, the idea is to replace our governmental systems with their own. So, Klaus Schwab says this. He says that we must create new, socioeconomic systems in order to create stronger government. So, the Orwellian translation of that is that we have to create tighter controls and reinvent the government so that we can do what we want, and that's what they do. And they do that by bribing people into compliance, and that's primarily the means that they do it. There's several different avenues that they use. They use ICLEI, the local governments for sustainability. There's a collection of local development districts that they've established, and the Northern Border Regional Commission, and all of these towns. Now, I want to start out by saying that all the people that belong to these organizations that I just mentioned are not people in lab coats with, rubbing their hands sinisterly over, potions and stuff. They're good, well-intended Americans that they believe that, like you said, they're going to create this utopia on Earth, and they believe they're doing the best for everybody else, But what many of them don't see is that the more control you have, the more you reduce the choice and Americans have with what they can do and how they can elect their public officials. And that's really the key for why I started this presentation. I wanted people to see the control mechanisms that they use. So they use people that are innocent and well-intended, and all the while they take away choice. And so that's where it really all starts. I wanted to, a lot of times you watch on the news, there's thousands of videos on the Great Reset. You hear it all the time. People watch Klaus Schwab, like, what is Klaus Schwab having for breakfast? Like, it's just ridiculous information. But how does it work in practicality? How can we stop it in our community? And that's why I wanted to present to people this presentation I showed you to demonstrate.
And how do they do that, Matt? How do they make good people, good Americans, to believe that they're doing something great? How do they use all these people who are, like you said, are well-intended, who love their country, but at the same time, they cannot see the dystopian, totalitarian nature of what is being built. How do they do that? It's really important to understand, I think, for people to then work on the solutions on how to push back against that.
Well, it's how they've been doing it for a really long time, going back to whatever, 1903. They show up in your town with a big bag of money, like they did over here in Owl's Head, Maine. And they come in and they say, oh, we can help you build all the things that you want. You know, we're here to, you know, we're all part of like this consortium or whatever, a group of, you know, like the Mid-Coast Council of Governments. We're here to help you. We're here to help, you know, promote prosperity. That's how they do it. So they come in, and it's really always it's bribery. It always has been. And so the thing that people don't realize is when it's happening is that there come attachments with it. Just like when selectmen were spending the ARPA money that came through, you know, after the COVID relief, and they didn't see that basically they were required by signing those checks to implement the plans of, you know, the federal government. And so that's what you have to show people, is that you're actually turning the government upside down to where it's completely controlled from the top instead of by the people down. And so you do this by demonstrating, like, well, look at this, what's similar to the support your local police program. You show them, well, look at, they're taking in training from FEMA, you know, from Homeland Security, and they're taking all this money. So what have they done? You've taken out the accountability of the local government to the people, which is where it should be.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way you stop it, that way. You have to show them. First, you always have to follow the money. Then you have to follow the agreement. And it's everywhere on everything they talk about, from planning commissions in New Hampshire to the NRPC, which is the National Regional Planning Commission, to there's 9 districts there as well. They also have the same thing going on over there with the Northern Border Regional Commission. You have Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, and New York. And they're all being broken up into, you know, regional, these local development districts. And then you, in addition to that, in New Hampshire, they have these planning commissions as well. So it's funny when people from New Hampshire say, we're the freest state in the union. I'm like, well, I really can't tell, because 4 of your major cities are run by ICLEI, which is the United Nations NGO. United Nations NGO chartered organization. You have 16 cities in Maine. So, you know, this is really important information to say to people, well, if you're going to fight, you want freedom, how are you going to do that? What's your plan? Do you have a plan? Because if you show them the map and you show them what these people are doing, they control all the major population centers. So how do you win, right? So you go back to the elections. You can't win. You can't win when that many people are bribed into self-slavery. Can't do it. So you have to have another plan. And so what's your other plan? And honestly, that's where the John Birch Society comes in, because we are the algorithm that you cannot alter.
You just quoted Klaus Schwab. You said that the Great Reset will encompass a complete transformation of the social and economic systems. How would you describe the end goal of these transformations, Mads? How would America look when the transformation is complete?
They would be how they live, how they exist, and what they could eat, what they can wear, what they can believe will be centrally controlled. And they're already doing it to what businesses can survive. That's the end goal. The end goal is that you will not do business unless you agree with who we are. It's basically you're becoming part of a giant cult, and that's all there is to it. So for people that want to conduct business in a free way, you know, open up a hot dog stand or even like a lemonade stand, they'll control that too, because you have to agree with everything they say. And so this is important that we show this to people as well. So I always ask people, when you're looking at how Klaus Schwab talked, remember, he's not really talking to you. He's talking to his people. When he talks about his company, he's talking about the people that are going to come inside your government and conduct business and subsume who you are and inculcate your government with its belief systems. You know, it basically, I like to use viruses as an example of that, because he's a giant virus. I'm going over past your question, but really the answer is in how they operate. A vampire can't come into your house unless you give it permission, right? Hmm. So, it's, you know, mythologically speaking, you know, I've never met any vampires, and they've never been in my house, but I don't know. But the thing is that you just say no. They are dead without your money. That's how it is. So it's interesting because the towns are really the last bastion of hope that we have in America at this point. I mean,
The towns, you said?
The towns themselves, because these LDDs, these regional planning commissions that they have across the country, and I think there's seven of them. I sent you a map of that as well. I mean, they basically are pumping money into all these, you know, the inter-county organizations. So what do you have left? You have your town saying, no, we will not, we're not going to join this. We're not going to be part of this. And we'll suffer and we'll die by ourselves, but we're not going to take part. And that's how you win.
Sophia paused before the door. It read, Department of Bi-Digital Convergence. Just inside was a new world, a better world, the one of everlasting life, of no pain, of no loss, of no problem. She entered the chamber and her surroundings changed. She saw around her an infinite field of waving golden grain surmounted by cloudless blue sky. The AI voice whispered gently in her mind, Welcome to the singularity. She couldn't see it and couldn't feel it, but her body had almost instantly been covered by a swarm of tiny gray multi-legged bots that melted through her clothes and into her skin. Not perceiving the nightmare, her eyes had already been consumed and the rest of her body was dissolving as the bots digested her flesh. She felt only a warmth suffusing her being. Drowsy, she drifted to sleep, and her last thought was one of panic. Would she ever wake? Could a nightmare vision like this be an outcome of the much-hyped transhumanist technological singularity? Enter the world of the future as illuminated by the experience of the past in Endgame, the new book by Dennis Barrett, the publisher of The New American Magazine, and find out how the disastrous COVID pandemic response fits with the technocratic elite's thirst to create a transhumanist utopia. Get Endgame from shopjbs.org with free shipping with code ENDSHIP, ENDSHIP. Or get Endgame and the Great Reset Collector's Issue of The New American Magazine and get free shipping plus an additional 20% off both with code END20, END20.
So you mentioned this bribery part, which is extremely important, but, and you know, the importance to follow the money, and which is, again, cannot be overestimated how important it is to understand when, where the funding comes from. But at the same time, I have another pressing concern about whether most people are even recognizing the danger and totalitarian nature of the Great Reset and their promoter, its promoters. You know, Matt, like George Orwell said, the masses never revolt merely because they are oppressed, and they are never even aware they are oppressed. I personally see it as a huge problem because now we're dealing with more than just old-fashioned propaganda and censorship, even though these methods are still used by the elites. We're dealing with a very sophisticated psychological warfare, you know, that allows to reprogram people subtly yet very effectively, making them accept the most restrictive measures. And you mentioned COVID. Like, for example, during COVID, we all saw an astounding level of compliance with restrictions and mandates. And moreover, there was a substantial proportion of people who were hungry for even more aggressive restrictions. I remember there were polls suggesting that a huge portion of Democrats would like to see unvaccinated people jailed. I mean, how concerning is it to you? And what do you, as one of the top JBS commanders, believe can be done to counteract this scary tactics of switching on the worst totalitarian inclinations in people?
So, well, the answer to a lot of that is really turning their logic on itself and say, you know, I was talking to a young lady. We were out for dinner with a bunch of people, and she said, "Oh, well, you have to have this because it puts other people, you know, in danger." So that's always the principle, that their fallback principle. I said, "So where do we stop?" I said, "What about people who have the flu? We know they're dangerous to at least 10% of the population, and any given time, 10% of the population is vulnerable to the average flu, or a cold. Consider the elderly or somebody with an autoimmune disease of some kind." I mean, so where do we stop? Where do we draw the line? Is there a line? And the answer to that is there should never be a line. If you are afraid to go outside, then you shouldn't go outside. It shouldn't be incumbent on everybody else to do it. So, but asking people to think their stuff to the nth degree, to take it to its logical absurdities, is very helpful, especially with somebody that's already been brainwashed, you know, with thinking, oh my gosh, if you're going outside, you're a murderer. You know, you had George Clooney talking about that. You're socially irresponsible, you know, if you go outside and you're not vaccinated. Mm-hmm. So we have to undo that mindset. That's part of what I do as well. We have to undo a lot of that bad thing.
How do you do that? How do you undo this?
Well, you have
monstrous brainwashing of American people, especially young ones.
You have to be willing to understand people, first of all, at their level. What are their pains? You know, that's how they operate. They've always had. What are they worried about? So oftentimes you say to yourself, people are scared. That's your first thing. So I don't want to yell at these people like horrible things about what they believe in. That's not how you win people. How you win people is by making them feel safe and letting them know that in many ways you believe this very, very same things. Do I believe in people being responsible for, you know, managing their health when they go outside? Of course I do. I believe that that's everybody's responsibility. But does the government decide to say who's sick and who's not sick and who goes outside? And I point out the disadvantages of that. And there's a lot of heartache stories about that. People that suffered horribly with COVID, they had nowhere to go get food. And stores like Hannaford's were telling people you couldn't come inside unless you wear a mask. And there was this young girl, she had been raped as a teenager, and they held her mouth. You know, so wearing a mask was a trauma for her. And I bring up stories like that. I try to find whatever human interest stories I can to let people know that there are going to be circumstances where people can't do this. So let's come up with another answer. What is your answer? And I always put that to people. What do you think we should do in this situation? We have a young woman who has to go shopping. She has no car. She's disabled and she can't wear a mask. And you can tell her not to eat. Well, that's what some of these grocery stores did. They literally told people, this is another thing. They told people, either you do what we tell you or you're going to starve. They were willing to make that transition, and they did. And so, but what's sad is to watch people in the freedom movement go back to these stores, like in the Bible talks, like a dog returning to his vomit, you know, you know, that's what they're doing. I mean, I'm sure it's not how they entered in the Bible, but it's very similar. It's like you were really angry about these people. You waved your flags, you marched in the streets, and now you're like, oh, well, I guess, you know, we can go back into your store. No, those stores should never be giving your money ever again. That's how we do it. That's it. You know, you told me that my family had to starve. I'm done with you. That's it. It's a very simple equation. People need to realize that. Money is everything. You know, that's all there is to it. Money is everything. So,
Matt, how would you describe the impacts of your efforts to educate or re-educate people? Are you seeing any reassuring results?
I see a lot of good results. And what we do is we pull people from what some call that movable middle. There are people that see that this stuff is affecting their lives. Unfortunately, people think in extremes, and so you have to show them that there isn't it's not necessarily extreme. It's not either pro MAGA, you know, crazy guy, you know, waving the flag and just fanatic. And I say that with the best of intentions. It's not they're well intended people, but that scares people that are in the middle that are going, hey, something's going on, something's bad. So what I do is I provide people with, you know, the reason to say that it's not about the extremes. America is about the middle. It always has been. It's about as much freedom for as many people as possible. That's what makes America great. And so we have to find those people that are being affected. You go, and we have a hands-on approach. You know, if you're asking me that, the approach is to be hands-on, one-on-one with people, and to get to know them and find out, you know, what's bothering them. And don't offer them extremes. Offer them what America really is. And that's what I like about what I do for a living. Cause you know, it's America. We're here to let everybody get along as much as possible. I mean, the Constitution was this great document. And for the first time in history, something was created that people could latch onto to get kids for the most amount of people to get along with, you know, to get along with each other. And so it has to remain that at all times. And so these things, it's these plans that these people that's what we have to say, that this is destroying that. It's destroying that ability for us to get along. So for me, that's what it means to be a member of the Job Virtue Society, that it is the place where we can learn to get along with each other as many people. Let's, you know, say nonpartisan, not committed to to the extremes of issues and find out what it is. You know, one of the things I tell people, you know, you talk about a learning process that people have, and that learning process, say to people, well, ask yourself this. Don't ask me what I think. Don't ask the guy on the radio what he thinks. Ask yourself, are they allowed to do this? And where does it say that? That's what you have to do. That's the first question you should ask people. And what do you think the purpose of government is? And if so, where does it say that? So you have to get people thinking about this themselves. That's the key. Mm-hmm. So that's how you work counterintelligence. You know, these people are programming us and we're trying to deprogram. That's, you know, and that's not just liberals and pro-COVID people. That's most Americans. Most Americans, to some degree, latch on to a certain variant of socialism. And that's where the danger always is. And so we have to ask ourselves, what are we willing to give up? We love America? Good. And let's show it with how we act and how we vote. So anyway.
Yeah. Talking about voting, I'd like to get your take on the connections between the Great Reset and presidential elections in America. Obviously, the globalists and socialists would love to see one of their own in the Oval Office, Matt, right? In this regard, what do you expect them to do to achieve that? Or would they just let the voters decide and hope they vote blue? How do you see it unfolding?
Well, I see what they're going to do is they're going to continue to define, you know, they're going to define the narrative, you know, about what is, you know, what makes a good presidential candidate. And they're going to continue to demonize people that don't follow into that narrative. And so we have to just take that book, that playbook, and throw it out the window. So an example of that is, again, what's happening to Trump is criminal by any stretch. What they're doing to him as an American citizen, forget about him being president, is clearly criminal. We can't let that distract us from what it is that we have to do. And so here's the thing. If we vote in a polarized way, that could be used against us. And so the thing is as soon as it's discovered, say, for instance, DeSantis is an extremist, and you see how the Republican candidates are interviewed. They're interviewed based on how extreme they are, you know, Vivek and all the guys. It's like, you denounce white racism, you know, they're always asking them these questions. And so what we have to do is we need to find a non-polarizing candidate. And that will be a guy that can talk objectively about the issues and bring in an Americanist version to the conversation is the surefire way to win. You can't beat that. You can't touch it at any level.
Do you see any non-polarizing candidates in the race right now?
I mean, Vivek is there, but, you know, it's questionable whether or not he actually hold public office. You know, the article by Joey Wolverton. And I do have trouble with somebody that hits the bell that often. You know, Obama was like that. If you watched him during his first presidential run, he was hitting that bell every time, you know. And that makes me a little worried, because Justin Trudeau did that as well when he was running in Canada. He was pro-gun, he was pro-life, he was all these things. And, you know, he had all the right talking points. So I'm always tend to think that the guy he's an extreme, like he's too on the mark. But the guy that maybe doesn't really, you know, hit that mark all the time, he might be the guy, or the guy that's kind of fumbling a little bit, that might be the guy that we want. You know, that's so polished, you know, because that's troublesome. It's always been trouble.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because I it's really interesting. So the JVS, I know, does not endorse political candidates. So I'll ask you in an indirect way, okay? How do people can distinguish between real patriots who care about this country and are willing to push back against the Great Reset and, on the other hand, the establishment surrogates who say all the right things, but in fact, are the deep state creatures? So what's your advice on what to look at?
My main thing is that you have to be as dispassionate as possible. That's what we provide, you know, our organization. If we provide a ground, a place where people can have these conversations objectively. So if, for instance, the name of a candidate comes up in office, I like to get people to criticize that person as much as possible. Now, that might be my half-Jewish heritage. You know, we like to complain a lot, at least I do. And but that is always a great way to test the mettle of any candidate and to learn about what you believe and think. You know, always test your belief system. So how do we do that? Well, I mean, you could look at the voting record of, say, DeSantis. I think, well, he was a congressman who was no better than 62%. And some of the things that he does are very, he does them almost like as a status, like, I'm going to do this. And I have, like, just, and Obama did the same thing. I have pen and paper, and I'm going to do this, and, you know, and like ruling by decree, you know. So, you know, you get a little worried about a guy like that. So I think it's really good when you bring in, through the John Birch Society, like this, this objective background of information of saying, you know, well, what can they do? You know, it goes back to the questions I just said to you before. What do you think the purpose of government is? And if that's how you have to start. And so is the president's job to, you know, sign executive orders like every 5 seconds, and who gets to get away with what, you know? So why is it okay if this guy does it, but not that guy? So that's what the John Birch Society will teach, is for you to try to stand in that middle and be able to have your guy assaulted at every level. That's how I think. Kind of like a Thunderdome, but a little bit different. I'm kidding. I don't know if you ever saw Mad Max, but
I have. Matt, yeah, again, talking about dystopias, many observers, such as, for example, historian S.T. Karnick, are warning of the chaos that will be unleashed in America this year. And now again, the JBS is all about solutions and productive action. So what do you see as a remedy for possible chaos this year?
Well, to work with as many freedom groups as you possibly can and protect them from harm. That would be your first thing. And to, you know, my goal has always been to get people to be, you know, to be able to get control their emotions with this stuff. And that's really hard. But not to participate on our side, and don't instigate. Instigating is the worst thing you can do. You want to speak your piece. So that's one solution. One solution is that. And then the more of a presence that virtues have in their community, they can see that there is an objective body of people out there that want to have a conversation with them, that want to come together and find peaceful solutions. And so you can't do that hiding in a room watching thousands of hours of videos. You have to connect with the people around you. So that is definitely, to me, the solution, one-on-one relationships. And I think that, for instance, if you were to have a chapter meeting, not a chapter meeting, but say like a Constitution is the Solution workshop or any kind of workshop, the idea is that you don't do this in a vacuum. You do it with your community. This is your community. You live in, say, Pelham, New Hampshire, and you work with everybody. Make yourself a list. I tell everybody, make a list of everybody that's on elected official. All right. And find out like when they're elected and when they're not, you know, whatever, from the dog catcher to the mayor, doesn't matter. Right. And you invite them in to be part of your, you know, to you, whatever it is that you're doing. That's public, you know, chapter meetings are private, obviously, but that's a surefire way for people to say, so, you know, for instance, you know, after we do a Constitution is the Solution class, I'll grab people and we'll take flyers and we'll hand them out downtown Concord, which is considered very liberal. They really can't stand anybody that looks like he might be holding an American flag. And so we bring them there and we show them, you show by example. They could dispute your words, or they can't dispute your actions. That's the key. So how you behave in public is very, very important. I teach people that, you know, you don't want to go up to people and jam stuff in their face. Hey, like freedom? You know, here you go, right? You have to approach people and say, hey, I have some information for you. If you like it, great. If you don't like it, my number's on it. Give me a call. We'll talk about it. So you're not there to like confront the public every day. So you could do this. And as you do this, your example is what goes before you, not sometimes your words. And that's really important.
That's really important. Matthew, I would like to thank you so much for your time today, sir. Please tell us what's the best way to follow you and what's the best way to learn more about the John Birch Society.
The best way to find out about the John Birch Society is go to jbs.org, join now. And if you want to find out where your coordinator is, you know, you can put in your zip code. It'll tell you to join now, find out who they are. If you want to follow me, we started a Robert Welch book club. which, you know, we meet every Sunday night for like about an hour. We're going through the works of Robert Welch. So it's just, it's a very easy website, robertwelchbookclub.com. That's it. That's all you have to do. It's on the calendar. And my number is in the, you know, on JBS, you know, site. So call me anytime. That's what it's about.
Fantastic. That was Matthew Rhodes, everyone. Thank you so much for watching. I'm Veronika Kirilenko of The New American.
Remember when the only uncertainty in news was the weather forecast? Now, our world is clouded by half-truths, misdirection, and gaslighting. The deluge of lies from leftist activists posing as journalists is unrelenting. At The New American, we hold fast to the timeless truths of our founders. Sanctuary in the storm. Visit thenewamerican.com today and get 25% off your subscription.